He's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
It's the tale of an encrypted phone company and a blogger. Then that blogger winds up being shot to death outside of a sex club in Amsterdam. There's Moroccan gangsters, Scottish mafia, and sketchy phones. Motherboard's Joseph Cox tells us all about it on this week's episode. I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. So Joseph, a blogger who blogs about crime, ends up dead in front of an Amsterdam sex club. How did this happen?
Yeah, so this guy's called Martin Kok. He's a two-time convicted murderer.
He's a murderer himself.
Yeah, he's a murderer himself. He's a serious criminal. He served time in the Netherlands. And then when he was released, he started his own website called Butterfly Crime, where, you know, it could be described as journalism, it could be blogging, it could be doxing, but he basically wrote about the Moroccan mafia, various other criminal groups, because, of course, with his background, he has pretty unique access to this world. And he wouldn't just say, oh, this event happened. He would publish very sensitive and sometimes private information about criminals, and that would annoy these people. But anyway, Kok one day was in Amsterdam having lunch at a hotel with other journalists. He then leaves the hotel, and as he's walking away, CCTV footage shows someone point a gun point blank at the back of his head, about to shoot him. Something happens. I mean, either the assassin loses his nerve or the trigger doesn't, it malfunctions or something, and the person runs off. Anyway, hours later, Kok has a meeting with someone called Christopher Hughes, who is an employee of MPC, an encrypted phone company. And they decide, after agreeing on some work, you know, Kok's going to run some adverts on his website, they go to this sex club you mentioned. They spend some time there. Kok sends a photo of himself to another journalist lying just in his Speedos in bed, below a erotic photo. And then as they're leaving, a hooded figure jumps out of the bushes and shoots Kok, killing him. And Hughes, the NPC guy, just walks away.
Just walks away, nonchalantly.
Right, yeah. You look at the CCTV footage, and it's not clear how much Hughes saw of the shooting, but it's not like he runs to Cox's defense. He apparently leaves the scene.
Well, I mean, that's suspicious, because obviously if you didn't know and there was a shootout and your friend just got killed in front of you, you'd probably run, you'd probably freak out, maybe call 911. This guy just walks off.
Right, and very suspicious behavior, and the authorities detain Hughes briefly after that and then let him go. And kind of everyone forgets about this assassination, really, and the encrypted phone company, at least at the time.
And this encrypted phone company, what is it?
Right. So MPC, what they do is they will take Android phones, you know, a Nexus or a Nexus 5X, they will put their own operating system on it, and that will have encrypted email, encrypted instant messaging. They may have the GPS removed and that sort of thing. They are part of this industry that makes so-called secure or encrypted phones, similar to Phantom Secure, which has been in the news linked to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police case.
This case all traces back to an investigation into an encrypted service called Phantom Secure. So this was a Canadian company, a BC-based company, that was under investigation for giving phone services to international crime groups. So basically, when we're talking about encryption services, we're talking about, you know, I could send you a message, you could see it, but a police officer could not see what was in those messages.
There's this sort of cottage industry of all of these different companies, and MPC fits into that space, but they're kind of unusual as well.
Why are they unusual?
Well, with Phantom Secure, it was run by one guy who wanted to protect privacy, and then, according to several people I've spoken to, he then fell into the criminal market. What we found was that MPC is actually created and run by organized crime figures. So the Hughes, Christopher Hughes, who was meeting Cock at the sex club, it emerged that he is part of the so-called Escalade group, which Scottish police have been trying to pin down. There's a European arrest warrant out for Hughes and several other people, including the so-called brothers, James and Barry Gillespie. And these are top-tier, serious, organised criminals smuggling cocaine and heroin into the UK and Europe, primarily from South America. And it turns out, as we found, that they are actually the people who made this encrypted phone company.
So the Scottish Mafia owns MPC, this encrypted phone company.
Right, yeah. Whereas usually criminals may just buy the phones or the companies may sell to them. Here, the brothers originally bought phones from other providers, you know, because they want to have encrypted communications. And then when they didn't want to trust other people with their own security, they made their own company, which is pretty unusual. Yeah, these are technologically highly sophisticated criminals. I mean, when police would pursue them, or surveil them, it looked like they had phone jamming equipment in their vehicles because the police couldn't pick up any frequencies or signals from the cars. They would have vans with hydraulics in them that would lift up, and then there would be semi-automatic machine guns and money and other weapons stored underneath. I mean, you think about in the movies where criminals apparently will have all this high-tech equipment. I mean, it really turns out that this is a sort of a melding of, you know, in-person, physical, traditional crime, and then some actually pretty interesting technology as well.
I mean, it's almost the reason this story really strikes me is that you have this situation where, like you said, these hardened criminals, these guys you expect to be sort of all physical violence, are actually quite sophisticated technologically, which kind of makes me think, well, I mean, crime and petty crime, they're catching up. It's no longer, you know, a specialty to be good at encrypted phones and have technology that can cell jam and make sure that cops can surveil you. This is becoming part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, this group had their own tech specialist who presumably would source some of this material, like the phone jamming equipment. But then the creation of the phone company itself is highly unusual. I mean, and we found, I think it was according to Free Sources, we identified one of the developers who actually made the operating system. They outsourced it to someone in Lithuania. He made a team. They then made the software. And then they stole code from another company and then they tried to use that. So even if the brothers themselves may not be, you know, tech bros, they can certainly outsource it to others who are definitely capable. And then they can make use of this technology as well.
Or they also just understand surveillance because this is a reality of being a criminal in 2019.
Right, exactly. I mean, these guys know what they're doing with the phone jamming or anything else. And to be clear, like, a lot of them have been caught and they have been convicted and sentenced, but the brothers have not. They are still on the run. One Scottish publication said they may be in South America. Just weirdly, a few hours after our investigation came out, the Dutch police announced that they are still searching for Christopher Hughes with the link to the Kok assassination. And apparently some of that group may be in Amsterdam as well. So even if they're on the run, they may not actually be that far away. And that sort of shows the audacity of these organised crime groups, right? I mean, I was listening to some audio earlier of a Scottish prosecutor, and she mentioned how audacious and, you know, hiding in plain sight some of these groups can be.
Organised crime has a massive effect in communities. Organised criminals live in plain sight, more often than not, amongst hard-working, law-abiding people. But they prey on people with vulnerabilities in our communities, such as poverty and addiction, and they have got utter disregard for the misery and devastation that they reap. They're all just about money.
And Cock, did you know him?
No, I didn't know him. I only started looking into Cock's murder after it happened in December 2016, but because I heard that there was this connection to the encrypted phone company. I mean, MPC reached out to me over Twitter DM in 2016. They wanted me to review their mobile phone. Obviously, they didn't say, "Hi, we're the technological wing of an international drug trafficking organization. Please, could you help us out? They presented themselves as a normal company who, you know, like Blackphone or anyone else who just wanted a review of their phone. And it was then I started looking into them. Then the murder of Koch happens. And there's a rumor going around that NPC's connected. Nothing really comes out until another mysterious source comes forward in 2018 and says, hey, it was NPC that set up this person to be killed. And then that's what our investigation is based on, obviously, with more reporting. And then hours after our investigation came out, the Dutch police confirm that they also suspect the same thing.
So let's get this straight. Some blogger pissed them off. Mm-hmm. He ends up getting popped. Mm-hmm. You just expose them. I got to ask, I get this question and I hate it. Is this something that kind of scares you about reporting on these types of groups?
The source, one of the main sources, highlighted how violent this group can be and how worldwide their connections are. Obviously, we sought legal advice and various other advice as well. I think these criminals probably have more to worry about. But I just think there's a public interest in highlighting, because if we look at this company that was made by criminals for criminals, and then the DOJ and the FBI are pushing very heavily against, you know, Facebook's encryption, for instance. So where you have to put a backdoor in that, or you have to provide some sort of access. Well, clearly, real serious criminals, they're just going to go make their own phone company. Like, they're not going to use Facebook Messenger. They don't care. And of course, some criminals will use Facebook. But this is a concrete case of the going dark problem where, you know, if you outlaw encryption, only outlaws are actually going to have strong cryptography, and that's what seems to be the case here.
It's an incredibly fascinating story. It's such a story about modern crime.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't get all that much insight into it. And I just hope that it can be put in the context of this going dark debate that we're continuing to have.
Fascinating and sketchy as usual. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we got that roundup life. Okay, I like this story a lot. It's frightening. A U.S. report that was commissioned by the Pentagon says the U.S. military will collapse in 20 years and cause this country to turn into a militia state, even more than it already is. What is this story?
Yeah,
terrifying.
So it's like every now and then the U.S. military says something like climate change is super bad and we should, like, we are preparing for it and we should do something about it. And then, like, the Trump administration just keeps doing what it's doing, which is, like, rolling back emission standards in California, like, you know, doing various nefarious and bad things for the environment. Meanwhile, like, its top Pentagon folks are like, yeah, climate change is really bad. It's going to fuck over the military and it's going to, like, ruin society. And so that's what we have here. So the U.S. Army War College commissioned this report or did this report back in August, but it kind of like wasn't picked up by anyone. So we have this writer named Nafiz Ahmed, who has covered sort of climate change, green energy, as well as like collapse of society since 10 years. Like, he's a really, really good reporter.
The fun beat.
It's really, yeah. He writes such like fun articles as like experts say society will begin collapsing in 2050 and things of this nature. Anyways, he found this report, and the long and short of it is that, like, Trump's new, I forget what it's called, chairman of chief of staff, he's the highest Pentagon man.
Other than the
commander-in-chief himself. Right. He commissioned this report, and it came out in August, and it was like, within the next 20 years, there is a good chance that not only will the U.S. Army not be able to function because of climate change, but also, like, society and the United States won't be able to either. And the reasons for this are like some of the same reasons that we hear when we talk about the collapse of society. It's like the destabilizing effects of mass migration because of drought and natural disasters and people having to like move away from the coasts. So that's like a very destabilizing thing that could, if America continues to want to sort of put its military all over the place, like stretch is very thin. They also suggest that they don't have enough water. Like they're not going to be able to send troops into arid places and keep them hydrated. Yeah, because just it's so expensive and difficult to transport water on like that on the scale that will be necessary, that they predict will be necessary. And then they talk about things like, you know, the U.S. infrastructure is just like a complete disaster. So you start thinking about the fact that we don't have a lot of levees and we don't have like a lot of our bridges could like go bad. And our power grid, as we're seeing in California right now with the wildfires, like that can cause mass chaos. And so you kind of get these like cascading effects. And they believe that, you know, they don't put like a percent chance on it, but they say that there's a decent chance that these cascading effects will sort of like avalanche on top of each other and the like U.S. military won't be able to operate sometime within the next 20 years. And some people see that and they're like, good, like,
yeah,
screw the military, but also...
Yeah, but then it's like a lot of guns this, lying around.
Yeah,
more than
it's
already
that,
are.
And it's like, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's like, if the military isn't working, that means like that so much has gone wrong both in the United States and around the world that we're like looking at a very bad situation.
Yeah, it's like, let's just have warlords. Can't wait. This story is also a bummer. A great story. Major bummer from Lauren. An engineer says a software firm cut her maternity leave after her baby died. This is horrific.
It's really, 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 really bad. Yeah, this story, it's really one of the most horrifying stories I think we've run, which is saying a lot. So this Silicon Valley data sales engineer at a company called Informatica, which contracts with Microsoft, and it's like a lot of other, it's a big company. Like, it's a massive company. It's one of these ones that provides a lot of services behind the scenes. You know, was pregnant. Told her bosses. She told us that she was sort of like promised a promotion when she came back. That sort of like disappeared. And then she went and had the baby. And within 1 hour, the baby died suddenly. And she was supposed to have 8 weeks of maternity leave, which is not very long. Like, that's sort of one of the problems here, is that the maternity leave wasn't very long in the first place. But then the company was like, oh, well, you don't have a baby anymore. Like, our maternity leave policies cover only natural births and like childcare healing and stuff like that. And they asked her to come back to work sort of like within 6 weeks. And it's just really bad. And
yeah,
like
I don't know how do you paint this one other than being super incredibly shitty.
Yeah. And it's like, we had all the emails to back this up. Like, she had all the communications with Informatica that she shared with us. And it was not like, hey, we're so sorry for your loss. It's like, hey, we don't have policies for this. So like, we don't know what to do, but like, you should come back to work.
Yeah. So like TikTok, yeah, come on back.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been covering this a little bit. Like, earlier this year, we covered this woman who quit Google after she had a baby because she said that she was discriminated against. So Lauren's piece, it uses this this case at Informatica to sort of explore a much bigger problem in Silicon Valley and obviously society as a whole, which is pregnancy discrimination and how do companies treat mothers and working mothers and all that sort of thing. So it's well worth your read.
Man, awful, awful. And great, great reporting from Lauren. So I want to talk about another UFO story. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's just, I love them. I love them. I love them, Jason. I believe.
I have two. I don't know if you saw both.
I know. I saw the one, we got one here.
Okay.
Okay, the largest single collection of UFO material is being cataloged.
Yeah, so my favorite thing about this piece is the picture. I don't know, did you see the picture?
I saw the picture.
Can you describe the
just
picture?
Just a bunch of shit everywhere and a dude in the middle of it.
It's like a man sitting in an office with yeah, just like papers everywhere.
Everywhere.
Like, it's just
And it would take like 10 years to go through it, right?
Yeah. So this guy's name is... Always with the names. So this guy's name is Stanton T. Friedman, who is a Canadian scholar and a former nuclear physicist.
That's right. The Canadians... We're here
again,
for that UFO.
Again with the UFO.
We're here for that
Canadian.
UFO life, man. Every, we're here for it.
Every single week. Every single
we're
week.
We're here for it.
So this guy was like a true believer. Like he studied the Roswell crash like back in 1947. And
you mean a truther? A real truth guy?
He actively believes that like aliens lived among us. But at the same time, like he was really good at just getting government documents and like compiling them and then giving talks about them at various... alien conventions and things of this nature. So he studied, like, you know, aliens for 60 years. He's just got reams and reams of papers. They're just scattered everywhere. They're not at all cataloged in any way, shape, or form. And then he dies suddenly earlier this year. I mean, he was very old, but he died unexpectedly. And now we have folks who are cataloging it at the Provincial Archives in New Brunswick.
Nice.
Where's New Brunswick, Ben?
It's close to Quebec. And it's in Atlantic Canada. It borders Nova Scotia and Quebec.
Thank you.
It's the only bilingual province in all of Canada.
Is it?
Oui, pour les Français là.
Amazing. Okay. So they have a library there, presumably. That's what the archive is. And
there's a library there, Jason.
They're very slowly going through all these papers and like, you know, you can already go there and see some of them, the ones that they have cataloged. But over the next 10 years, they're going to put all the other ones together.
That's amazing.
Are we not going to talk about the other UFO story? It's really
All
up
right.
your alley.
Let's go. The other one.
So QAnon and UFO conspiracy theories
yes.
are sort of merging.
Yes, yes.
Ben, can you give like the 5-second version of what QAnon is? 10-second version?
Oh, it's basically they think that Trump is being overtaken by the deep state. And there's a lot of insane conspiracy theories that have to do with... John F. Kennedy Jr. coming back to life and being this new president.
It's like completely unintelligible, but it's
wild.
It's basically like that.
And people really, I think the real thing is it's like, it's a very extreme conspiracy theory about the deep state and Trump being a victim of it. And people are actually, like a lot of people are falling for it.
Right, but supposedly, according to the conspiracy theory, there's like one or more people sort of at the highest levels of government who are using this account on 8chan,
yes.
which is now defunct, and they are telling the real truth about what's happening.
Yes.
So, like, this person's name is Q on
yes.
8chan, and they're like, here's what's actually going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the
So that's
the
conspiracy,
yeah.
Yeah. And so this has gotten, like, obviously, like, huge within various right-wing slash, like...
It's not even just the right.
It's the crazy part.
It's like,
just,
everyone.
Yeah. It's gotten a lot of followers and believers. And I think the UFO, like, truther believer movement has seen this and gotten a little jealous. So they're like, yo, like, maybe we should sort of get in on this and we can spread the gospel of UFO and alien trutherism to these folks.
Oh, God.
And meanwhile, the QAnon people are also like, well, you know who's really susceptible to conspiracy theories? Like UFO people. So it's kind of like a symbiotic, like back and forth relationship where you have like some of the top like QAnon YouTubers being like, oh, actually Q believes
like
that there's aliens.
This is conspiracy seeding is what this is.
It is, yeah. And like they're sort of like crossing over and like...
Which sucks because UFOs are real and QAnon is fucking stupid.
Yeah, and also like as like by and large, UFO conspiracy theories or UFOlogy or whatever you want to call it, UFO believers are like largely pretty harmless. Like I don't know, you could probably point to some ways that it's not, but it's like... That stuff is not violent for the most part. It's not exclusionary. It's not like
it's
not like racist. It's not like, as far as I know, maybe I'm like missing something here, but it's like it's relatively harmless. Whereas like QAnon is very much like disinformation, really bad, like undermines the trust in democracy and all this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean Mac Lamoureux did a really good piece on how it's like legitimately destroyed families.
Yeah.
It's really sad. It's a completely pathetic conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Now my mentions are going to get just blasted. On to the next. Corellium. This is hot off the blog press right now.
Yeah, I don't even know if we published it yet. I just about to be. It and it should be out, but it'll definitely be out by the time you are listening to this. So I think we talked about Corellium sometime in the past. It is, I believe, an Australian company that emulates iPhones. So they have been able to virtualize iOS across basically like all of the iPhone models, as far as I know, at least like the last few. And they sell this to security researchers. And the reason that they do this is they are allowing security researchers to probe the iPhone in a much more efficient way than sort of buying a whole bunch of iPhones and physically probing them with like USB cords and things like this. So like you basically...
But like getting them from China off of like the...
Yeah, and it's like you can take an emulated iPhone and like if, let's say you're trying to hack like Touch ID or Face ID or something like brute force the codes, the PIN codes. It's like if you have a physical device, you have to, you know, sort of either manually input it or get like a USB device to like try different things. And if you can emulate it, you can just like try like thousands or millions of times. Like this is what I understand. Yeah. I may have gotten some things like slightly wrong here, but because I've never used Corellium, but that's what I understand it's used for. And so Apple sued Corellium for copyright infringement earlier this year, basically saying like, hey, you stole our software, like you can't use this. And just this week, Corellium and its owner, Chris Wade, who has a love-hate relationship with Motherboard, I think is a good way of putting it.
Okay. Spicy.
Has sort of like fought back and said, well, actually, we're like making software that's making iPhones safer because people are using it to find bugs that they're reporting to Apple. And like without us, there's basically, it's much harder to probe the iPhone. And they're just saying like, we've had good relationships with Apple in the past. We don't understand why Apple is suing us now. It makes no sense. They're also pointing out that, you know, until very recently, like they had good relations with Apple, and then Apple announced that it was going to be giving away or selling some developer type devices to like security researchers. This came out during DEF CON or Black Hat this year. And they're saying like, that's when things turn. So Apple is just sort of like trying to push us out of the market and completely control like the iPhone exploit.
So they're basically saying, market. Fuck you a little bit and go on.
Yeah,
let's go
and
to court.
I mean, to be clear, like this is a small startup. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I am not a lawyer, but I think it's unlikely that Corellium wins this because they are sort of like wholesale copying iOS and selling it, which is just like, it seems relatively cut and dry to me, but like, who knows? Maybe I'm missing something here. But like by and large, just because it's like copyright infringement doesn't mean that it's not a good thing and shouldn't exist. So I think it's like Apple didn't have to do this. They did it because Apple does this sort of thing all the time. It's really annoying. Apple wants, it's obsessive about control. And it's like,
I never want to get my phone fixed because of it.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
It's like, I don't want to wait in line forever. Okay. Well, that was the cipher.
It was. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Jason.
All right, farewell.
This week's episode was recorded and edited by Brian Arnold, voiced and produced by me, Ben Maku. You'll be hearing from me next week.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.